Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best day Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month of July 2022.
Sure is.
So we'll talk about whatever we feel like. How you guys doing? You guys doing all right?
I'm okay.
Your dog just ruined my candy bar.
Well, that's okay. You'll buy another one.
It was a good candy bar.
He ruined my life, so I have no sympathy. How's work? You guys doing all right? How's the things at home? Your parents good?
Yeah, they're doing well enough. They went to the beach. My family has a condo in New Smyrna, which is a beach in Florida.
On the East Coast.
Are we hurting this badly for content?
No, not really. It's just our cold open.
I remember years ago when we first started doing podcasts, I told John that I thought it would be great if he would just be like, it's sunny day in Orlando. I thought he'd chime in with some little bit about what's happening.
Good morning, Vietnam.
It was a sunny day in Orlando until about 6:30 when all hell broke loose and there was a nice thunderstorm that moved through.
Oh, yeah. It's like Kissimmee got wrecked. Mm-hmm. Which is like Southwest Central Florida.
They deserved it.
Yeah, last night was like the apocalypse with the lightning and everything.
Just listen, think about it this way, the listener. Central Florida is bigger than your state. No, for whatever reason, Central Florida feels like it's the biggest fucking thing. Because it just goes everywhere.
Yeah, it's very sprawled.
You know. Any rate, yeah, so you were asking me about my family. They were at the beach. I was here.
That's weird. My family's at the beach, too.
Which beach?
Anna Marie.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's out by St. Pete.
Yep.
My brother-in-law's
West Coast
family has a house out on Anna Marie Island.
They go at least once a year. They'll rent a place there for a week or so.
You know what's wild? It's really not any more miles to get from where we live here in Central Florida to New Smyrna as it is to Anna Marie, but it's at least an hour longer drive to get to Anna Marie because you kind of got to go through that quaint little town. And they've got
Tampa?
No. It's like once you get past, because you got it's south of Tampa. It's like, isn't it Tampa and then St. Pete?
Right, St. Pete, I think, is a little bit further south.
I've only been there once for my mom's wedding. Yeah. Mom got married at Anna Marie, and we stayed at a beach house there for a week. It was nice.
Yeah. If you like the ocean, but only when you're on a boat, Anna Marie is amazing. If you want to swim in the ocean, it's a terrible place to be.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was, what's the red tide?
Yeah, red tide is like an algae bloom that occurs in Tampa, which is notoriously gross.
Yeah, it killed all the fish. And so the beach was just covered with dead fish. And it reeked.
Yeah. And then there's... And it, think about it this way. Like, but it occurs on land, too, in a place called Ybor City. Ybor City is sort of like the layers of hell. It's like you descend one further layer into Florida hell when you go to Ybor City. I know this place because there's a really important venue there called the Crowbar. And they have a lot of shows there, so I go there every once in a while. Otherwise, Ybor is just like the land time forgot. Like, actually, having just been to New Orleans, it's kind of like a less piss-smelling New Orleans.
Okay.
You know, it's not a great place, though.
I mean, what Friday night are you having where your friend's like, hey, you want to go to Crowbar? Like, no, it doesn't sound pleasant.
I mean, maybe. You guys want to go right now? Let's go.
It's actually a pretty cool bar. I mean, it's a dive bar. If you want to go to the Crowbar, there's a place in Winter Haven called The Haven. It's like Winter Park, near...
Winter Haven's further out.
Near University and Forsyth. Mm. If you're at that intersection over there, there's this kind of shitty hole-in-the-wall bar called The Haven, which is sort of like Orlando's Crowbar. A venue that's been open for decades, and they host lots of metal shows. Fun fact. Mm-hmm. I went to a concert.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
I did that. I went to see a band called Purity Ring.
Uh-huh.
Purity Ring is not a metal band. It's like a bass group. It's a duo. It's like a DJ, producer, and then a very cutesy, effeminate woman that sings for the band. And yeah, it's like there's a really obscure sound that you guys probably haven't heard of called Witch House.
I've not. No.
Witch House is essentially taking trap music and then mixing it with industrial, I guess you would say. The end result, and usually women are usually if there are vocals, it'll be from a woman. For whatever reason, it fits the sound. Why they call it Witch House? It sounds like the music that would play at a house party for witches, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
Any rate. Just listen to the band. I'm probably doing a terrible job describing it. It's bass music. They make bass music. And they put on a really cool show. They had this giant projector thing set up between the DJ and then the singer. And the singer was in front of it. And they had all of these absolutely wild projections on the monitor and they played their music and it had a lot of bass in it, which is what you want to go to a show like that for. So all in all, two thumbs up, really solid show.
Yay, purity rings.
that's what I've been up to lately.
Wes, go to snack food.
I mean, I just had a cookies and cream Hershey bar. Well, I had
not like a candy, but like a like pretzels or some shit like that.
Yeah, like I like the like what Ryan brought to our last movie night, the peanut butter pretzels. I also like my mom will roast pretzels with various seasonings and stuff in there in the oven. Mm-hmm. Those are really good.
Let's say you're doing like a spread, like a buffet style spread for your like snack foods. You got to go with five. What five are you going with?
Well, I mean, it's like a spread. You always got to do the mix, the veggies with a ranch dip.
So let's take that as a given. But like five, okay. Just like, are you taking a tortilla chip? Are you taking like a Chex Mix?
This is not something I normally have put much thought into. I don't host many parties, John.
Okay.
Are chicken wings too much? Or is that just a given that chicken wings are going to be
there? I don't know. Like,
is that not really a
snack? I think like if you're throwing like a classy party, then yeah, you're getting those chicken wings.
But like peanut butter inside of celery sticks?
Those white tie affairs. That's where you bust out the chicken wings.
Yeah, give everyone their formal bib.
I just like that mixed diced fruit, you know, where it's like watermelons and what are the green ones?
Honeydew
is there. You gotta have some pineapple.
Like a cantaloupe.
You got that there. You're having a good time. I like those spreads where it's just random fucking crackers. It's like eight kinds of random crackers.
And like kind of like with some cheeses, makes it like a charcuterie board.
Yeah, I mean, I don't eat cheese, but I try to avoid cheese. But you know, like just mix of the.
Did you have a bad experience?
That's what my family does. It's always the mixed crackers, various types of cheeses, and a couple of different kinds of sausages. Just cut up.
Charcuterie is for real though. That is nice.
I avoid sausages, so we can have a charcuterie board, and I'll just take the cheeses and you take the sausages.
Yeah, I'll take all of the meats and the olives and the crackers, and you can have all of the cheese.
Cool.
Enjoy farting it out.
I love being constipated. It's just great.
You didn't answer, man. What are yours?
Oh, like it's like junk snack food. Like I like the spicy nacho Doritos. Those are real good.
Yeah.
I like a Chex Mix, just like a standard Chex Mix, like but
the bold Chex Mix.
Yeah, yeah, the bold savory like traditional flavor. I'll eat the Chex and I'll eat the pretzels, but like the little breadstick things and the little like wafer chip things, like the rye chips.
Those are the best part, man.
Okay, well you can have all of mine then.
You'll figure it out one of these days, man. It's like the best
part. I'm just gonna come to a party one time. I'm gonna see the two of you with two or three bowls, one filled with Chex Mix, and the others of your respective bowls
separating
all the Chex Mixes.
You'll see an empty bowl and two very satisfied people who have consumed the Chex Mix of just the ones they wanted. My favorite snack is sunflower seeds, though. You don't really have those in the spread like that, but I kid you not, so much sunflower seeds. I love them. They're my favorite snack.
I think you could. I think like with a charcuterie board, you could like put out like a bowl of nuts, like maybe some pistachios and some sunflower seeds.
I eat them in shells, with the shells. You know. Like it's.
But how do you eat sunflower seeds without the? What do you mean?
But you can buy them where they're shelled already, where it's just a bag of sunflower seeds that you could eat.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's. I don't know. I like the snack.
It's vile and repugnant.
Wait.
It's a snack.
What do you mean
a
shell for sunflower seeds? I only ever seen sunflower seeds. You just pop in your mouth, chew it, and then you spit the thing out.
Yeah, yeah. Like there are people will sell you bags of those where there is no hard shell. It is just the seed has been taken.
They're pre-chewed.
Yeah.
It's like if you got a like you've seen a bag of pistachios, right? With and without a shell, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Same deal.
Yeah.
But like, you know, in the same way that you can't really eat a pistachio with a shell without some kind of device to open it.
Not with that attitude.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you ruin your teeth if you want. But yeah, yeah, like sunflower seeds are like it's the perfect thing because it's not really filling. It is the time waster of snacks. Because you can't just eat it and get full of it. You know, you just kind of enjoy the snack until you've decided, I think I'm done.
Yeah, it like takes the same amount of calories to consume as it does to actually.
Yeah. And if and there's a brand that's based out of Washington called South 40. By far, they make the best sunflower seeds.
Okay.
I've only once in my life had better sunflower seeds than what they produce just on average. Like, damn, they're good. Like,
and they're a sponsor.
Don't ever, like, David's sunflower seeds is trash, honestly. Like, it ain't, you know, they're the big brand. Like whenever you watch a baseball game, you know, everyone's snacking on fucking David or Biggs or, you know, something like that. All those brands of garbage. Or
Bubble Yum sunflower seeds.
Yeah. Did they make that?
I don't know.
I think it's just an excuse, by the way, for them to take dip, but they've got this giant wad of gum in their mouth, so it looks like they don't have dip in their mouth.
Mm.
That's mine. That's
yeah, like it's like that thing. Big wad of Double Bubble, which is just a vile gum. Yeah. Just nasty.
They got buckets of it there. Yeah. It's so gross.
Yeah.
But I bet you it's just because they want to put actual dip in their mouth, and they need something that's like sort of like a a buffer.
Although, if I'm going with the bubble gum, I like the Bubble Yum. There's a strawberry watermelon flavor. It's real good. I also just discovered the other day a sour blue raspberry.
I cannot tell you the last time I had gum, honestly. Mm.
I hate gum with everything in me.
I like having... I have gum while I'm at work. Because it's a way that I can be like really condescending to people without, you know, actually saying something. Because if someone comes up to me and just talking about something real stupid, I'll just blow bubbles with my bubble gum. And then when the conversation's over, like, all right, good talk. Blow one last one and then they leave.
Mm-hmm. You ever have that scenario where you blow one that's too big and it gets hooked over your nose?
I roll with it. I just like reach my tongue out and pull it back in. Yeah, I'm going to be real gross as you're trying to tell me something work-related and I do not give a fuck.
Nice.
How about you, John? How's your family?
Oh, they're okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. End of story. They're walking and talking.
Okay. Your brother had knee surgery?
Is having knee surgery.
No, he had it today.
Interesting. Okay.
Did you not look at the family group text?
Oh, I deleted WhatsApp from my phone.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, he had it today.
Okay. Well, I hope that's going great. He's had like a couple of knee surgeries.
I almost sent a message out. Hey, Jamie, you want to play Ultimate Frisbee? I wanted to see what's up.
Wasn't it a hereditary trait in your family that you guys are double kneed?
So we
like where the shin should stop, like you have an extra knee.
We have two knees, but they're on the same leg.
Oh.
So
the other one's just one solid, one big giant
like the dad in King of the Hill.
Yeah, he's got fake shins but real feet.
Ryan, tell me about Neon White. This is a video game podcast.
Yeah, we've been talking about nonsense. No, yeah, I've been playing it a bunch since we lasted like one of our main shows a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
I actually picked the title up. I am loving the shit out of it. It is such a good game.
It's real good.
Yeah.
I think it's all right.
Yeah.
Wait, did you play too?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, if you haven't played it, there's a fuck ton of content in it. I was really surprised at just how much game you get with this package.
But. Yeah, I finished it. I rolled the credits, and I think my final game time was north of 25 hours.
Yeah.
If you're like going for everything, it can eat up a lot of time.
Yeah, that's true. But it's essentially speedrun missions from a first-person perspective. There are some guns in it, and you're kind of expected, but they're really more like tools to be used, much less than an actual shooter. This isn't really like a game that expects you to be like doing super accurate sniper fire a lot. I mean, every once in a while you'll have to make a good trick shot, but for the most part it's like whatever. But then you get gauged based on how well you do with it. So, you know, you may do a map where you're getting the bearings and, you know, your final time might be 45 seconds. But then it'll pop up a message and say, like, you got bronze level if you want to get platinum, which is sort of the highest level, but not really the highest level. You want to get platinum status, you got to beat it in 28 seconds. So then you spend the rest of the time just kind of trying to figure out how you're going to break the map or how you're going to do it better, because there's always sneak cuts, like ways to sneak around the map, shortcuts you can take. Sometimes you can literally just jump around whole buildings. Like it is so much fun just kind of poking at the game and just to kind of see what you can break and what you can do. And there's such short bursts of gameplay. It's interesting. I mean, it reminds me of so many games I love to play. Like, it is that first person perspective. In a weird way, it's a lot like the platforming that's expected of you in the Doom games, the new Doom games. It's got a little bit of Celeste in it, in the way that Celeste expects you to optimize movements and do things precisely. It also gives you tons and tons of attempts at it too, to just get it just right. You know, somebody said, I forget exactly how I phrased it, but there was like, it's a game that makes you feel good about gaming. It's a game that makes you think you're a good gamer, which I loved. I loved the description because, it is a game where at first you may feel like you're fumbling through it, but you will feel like such a god when you land everything right. and the timer comes up and it says like platinum status achieved, you know.
Yeah, and there's not much in the game that's like there to intentionally trick you or troll you. Mm-hmm. Like when if you like work through the level the first time, you're pretty much going to see all of like the little traps and the pitfalls and stuff. And it's not going to ever like spring something at you to the end, like, aha, I gotcha, now you got to start all the way over. Yeah. But it's a really great feeling, like when you run through the level the first time and you get like the gold ranking the first time through. Yeah. I don't know that I ever got the ace ranking the first time ever going through, like maybe once, if at all. But the ace ranking, a lot of times, not every time, you do have to find like the shortcuts.
Yeah. And by ace ranking, you mean kind of the bluish looking one, right?
Yeah, yeah, the one right above gold.
As I understand, there is actually another rank above that.
Oh, interesting.
There's the they're not charted and they're not tracked in the game. Hmm. Like you're still you by getting those bluish ones, the ace rankings, you're 100%ing the game.
Mm-hmm.
But believe it or not, and I have yet to hit one, and we may not just because we play on a Switch, I mean we could talk about that a little bit, the difference between Switch and PC for a game like this. But there is a what they call developer rank, which is not listed as a time to achieve, but you know, if you truly perfectly optimize it, like I think the opening one, if you complete it in like 9.58 seconds or something,
jeez, just okay.
The very first one, and I think that to get platinum status you only have to do it in like 10 and a half seconds or something. I don't remember the exact times, but basically if you are doing it as perfectly as one can do it, then you will get these super secret, you know, red rankings. And again, this is a game where if you were for one, this game feels like it was built for the Switch. It's perfect for the Switch. But if you were the type that wants to be super precise, a mouse and keyboard probably would play a little differently and maybe feel a little bit better, a little more one-to-one input to action kind of scenario.
Yeah, I think for me, having some gyro controls in there was helpful, but they're still like, that's what you're doing for fine-tuning, so there is still a bit of a disconnect with, okay, I got to use the one stick to put my cursor in the general area or, like, face the general area that I want, and I'm using the gyros for fine-tuning, whereas, you know, if you're just doing, like, a mouse and keyboard, it's all just seamless.
Yeah. Oh, and I have my I normally do not have my gyro set this crazy high, but for this game, to play Neon White well, I feel like you really need to have it cranked up to where it's very touchy, very sensitive. It is just such a fun and clever game, you know, and people could, if you could just pick up this game and just get the bronze statuses and, you know, get through to the end of the game, but I don't even know what to compare it to. It would be, imagine if you turn damage off in Dark Souls. Like, what's the point?
Right, and they do gate you a little bit, where you have to, like, get a certain amount of gold rankings to unlock the next group of stages, the next chapter in the game.
But no platinum status is harder to get than any. I keep calling platinum. No ace ranking is harder to get than any other ace ranking, frankly. Right. Some of them are just genuinely difficult and you'll have to do a lot of runs. Some, you'll get them on the second attempt. Like, I know there have been plenty where I just got them on. By the way, I haven't beaten the game yet. I think I'm on, I just finished the end of chapter 7.
Hmm.
So, as I understand, that means there's like four-ish more chapters.
Yeah, you're past the halfway mark.
Yeah, and also there are, as you unlock the stuff, and as long as you find the gift in every level, you're unlocking, like, side missions, essentially, side quests with the various characters in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, that is literally the one thing I've seen people complain about in the game, is just that it is such a tropey, generic narrative for the game, because there's almost the graphic novel style, like an interactive game kind of novel thing going.
Yeah, yeah, like a visual novel-y kind of stuff where, you know, you give them a certain amount of these findable collectibles, the gifts, and you'll unlock little dialogue sequences or side missions.
Yeah, and a lot of it's kind of cringy anime nerd content, you know?
Yeah.
But whatever, it's fine. The main guy I don't know the actor's name, but it's the same voice actor that's like Spike Spiegel. Like, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fun.
You know? I don't know who the other voice actors are, but they, you know, it's really not that bad. I mean, yeah, the content's kind of silly there, but I'm still listening to the dialogue. It's fun enough.
Yeah, I don't find it any more objectionable than any other
video game. You don't pay attention to the dialogue anyways, John.
There were a couple of characters where I'd like actually pay attention to what they were saying to me, but then there were some other characters like, no, I don't need to talk to you. I don't care what you're saying. So I just, they make all of the dialogue skippable, so I did.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, really cool game.
Oh, and yeah, super stylish. I'm listening to the soundtrack a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I love it. There's two volumes to the soundtrack. It is, oh my God, it is so much fun. It's all this drum and bass music. Again, it's this. It's like Celeste meets Doom meets Wave Racer. Like, it is a weird game when you think of all of the influences that come in, but it never feels like it's copying anybody else's thing. You know, this is a game for people that have any interest in speedrunning. You've probably already heard of this. Like, but for sure, play it. It's maybe so
like,
good.
And even if, like, speedrunning is, like, an intimidating prospect, like, I'd say try it anyway. Because...
again, it's a game that makes you feel like you're a good gamer.
Right.
Like, it gives you that satisfaction. Like, 115 times. There's so many stages.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And every stage is exciting. And, oh, yeah. Again, the sound is good. The graphics are great. I love how drenched in that vaporwave aesthetic they went.
And they do a really good job of, like, okay, here's the new mechanic, and this is how you're going to use it. And then they start mixing in all of the things that it introduced previously, so you have to keep things, you have to, like, keep all of your skills honed, because you never know when they're going to, like, oh, okay, and here's your double jump. It's back to this level, so remember when and how to use that. And they did a really, really great job of the way you, like, rotate out those guns, your skills.
Yeah.
Because there are some levels where you're going to need to be using, like, four or five of them, but you can only ever have two equipped to you.
Yeah.
And they do a really great job of, like, ordering them in the right way to where it feels like everything is progressing smoothly, but you're never in a situation where, like, oh, shit, I have the wrong skills by mistake. They're always going to give you the thing that you need to keep moving forward.
Yeah, true. And it's also... each level is sort of two different play styles in itself because of the gift. If you care about getting the gift, like, I know so many times where it's like, first thing I try to do, get the ace ranking. So, like, I'm in there, mm-hmm. and I'm doing all of this really, like, you know, Twitch gaming, and I get the ranking, and then I'm like, now I get to explore the level. Now I get to not worry at all how much time this takes. But I get to sort of really look at the map and all of the pieces that are here.
Poke at the walls and see
what
you can get.
Find the gift, and it's never just like, oh, it's hiding behind that wall. There it is. It's like, no, you actually need to get two of, like, the pistol jumps, but then also have one of, like, the shotgun dash.
You'll find a way to, like, work around and conserve these particular skills in order to work your way around to get to the thing.
Yeah, really... really fiendishly clever how they managed to turn any one level into two levels. Two completely different modes of thinking for how you're supposed to beat them. I mean, I'm gushing here. Like, this is, like, I don't know what game is going to come out this year that is going to top how much fun I'm having with this game. It is a delight.
Yeah, highly recommend.
Yeah.
Wes, talk about Fire Emblem.
Sorry, you're playing Fire Emblem.
Three houses.
You want to talk about three houses?
Yeah, oh yeah. I always want to talk about three houses.
Oh yeah.
Because you're playing the objective best house.
Yeah, I am. I am this time. Well, I started playing... I tried the demo for Three Hopes.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to a point in it, and I was like, I don't want to play this. But I'm now intrigued to go back to Three Houses, because I miss these characters so much. So I started playing Golden Deer Run. Because I never did it.
Ah, they're so delightful.
They are delightful. It's weird not having a... like, dedicated sword user, though.
Mm, it's true.
It's other than, like, your main character.
Yeah, other than Byleth kind of becomes your default sword user.
Yeah, you don't, because you get Petra and Black Eagles, yeah. And you get Felix and Blue Lions, and they're just straight up assassin swordmaster people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, very little sword users in this. There's a lot of axe, a lot of bows. A few different magic users. Yeah, a few different magic users.
Depending on the direction you take the characters. But, you know, you could turn anyone in that game into a sword user if you so choose. But, like, my first run through, I recruited Petra into the group because I needed another sword user. And then the second time through, I did the exact same thing. Because, again, like, you're always going to want that balance to your team.
Mm-hmm.
This team looks like dorks.
They are such dorks.
Oh, they are very
Lorenz.
Dorks. Yeah.
Lorenz, especially, like, his pre-time skip. Like, he's obnoxious. He's, like, the one guy in the team.
I hated him for the longest time.
Then he gets a haircut, and he tones down, like, his...
Well, he gets a haircut, but, like, only on half his head. Because the other half is longer. Like, Like, the right side of his hair is long, but the left side is short. Like, it's very weird.
But he's like, the only one in the crew who's like, oh, I'm a member of the aristocracy, so it kind of has, like, this superiority complex, and it tones down a bit.
Yeah, but it's, like, superiority in the sense of, like, I'm better, but I need to serve you because of... It was a weird mentality. Like, it was very back and forth on it, but...
But everyone else in the crew is just great.
Yeah.
I mean, he was... I mean, except for the dead-eyed Hilda and Lysithia. Like, look at their faces.
Hilda's great. Hilda's great because Hilda's always, like, trying to get out of doing work. And like, hey, you're going to do this for me, right?
And then she tries to justify this. Like, if you do the work for me, I will give you tons of praise. Or like, I all right. Like,
I'll say good job.
I'll say good job. like, it's all right.
Sorry, I really know very little about this game aside from you guys talking about it a year and a half ago or whenever.
You should play it. It's really, you like Fire Emblems, right?
Yeah, I like them all right. I played a couple of them, and I've enjoyed them. I think it was a Conquest. It was a DS one that I played not that long ago. I think 5 years ago.
I think you played, if I remember correctly, I think you played Birthright. And yeah. Birthright has a lot more of like that tinker with your base kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas Conquest is much more like, no, mission to mission. Keep moving it forward.
Yeah, you should try this one out though. It's the best Fire Emblem in my opinion.
So what's with the Golden Deer? Are they like the dorks? They the losers?
So basically, they're the three different factions. You have like the Empire, where everyone is very like aristocratic, and everyone has like their own little fiefdoms they're taking care of. And the same with the Blue Lions. Whereas like the Golden Deers actually has like commoners in their group. So there's it's just a less of an uptight group. And like in the Blue Lions especially, like once you get to the time skip, they're a country that's been invaded. So it's very much like rebels versus the evil empire, as much more self-serious. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, Golden Deer, like, no, we're just a bunch of dorks. And we're gonna fight this war.
So it's like Hufflepuff.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's not, yeah. I mean, I still really enjoyed the Black Eagles.
Hmm.
That was my first run through. I did the shorter run. I never did the second one.
I don't think I've ever done the second route either.
You did the one where you side with the Ilgard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't done the one where you don't. So.
Which I guess is like the canonical one, but whatever.
Yeah, but I didn't get very far in my Blue Lions. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I recruited the Ashen Wolves people. I'm only using Balthus, who is a monster. Like, just... I stuck on... Because in the DLC, they also give you this really overpowered item. Chalice of Beginnings? You get the chalice, which is like the MacGuffin that you're getting in the Ashen Wolf DLC. But you get this item, and essentially whoever has it can counterattack from any range.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And so I have Balthus, who is using gauntlets, punching people from two spaces away because he can counter from any range.
Nice.
So I just sit him out, and he just wipes people out. It's hilarious.
He becomes Nathan Fillion in that Suicide Squad movie.
Yes, yeah, like his arms detached and just go out.
That movie was so silly. Cool. Anything else about Three Houses that we need to...
Oh, it's great. I love this game. It's so good. I'm already playing my next run through, and I think I'm just going to do wacky stuff and see if it works well. Like, I always wanted to do a run where... Because every character has their set class that you want to take them, because that's...
Yeah, they kind of like they're recommended.
Yeah. So that way they get better stats to complement them. They have better stat growth and everything because they're their recommended path. I always want to do a run where I just take people in the complete opposite direction.
Mm.
And just like take Graphiel, I'll make him a
mage.
Yeah. Like just let's just get bonkers here. Let's just see if I can salvage something from this and see how well that goes. I always wanted to do something weird like that.
Here's Lysithia, my war knight. Cool.
It's great.
Well, I got a couple of games. As I check my list.
He opens the tome.
Oh, we already talked about Neon White. I did finish off...
The sound for tome openings is...
It's so crunchy. Why is it crunchy, Wes?
The binding on it is probably pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know? It's a well-made book.
So, I guess I don't have too much else to say about Turtles. I did finish off like almost everything you can do in the story mode. I got all the characters maxed out to level 10, which, you know, wasn't too much of a grind because the girls like playing with me. So, you know, we play a few levels and I'd gain like a level or two with like Splinter and Casey Jones were like the last two that I had to get up to level 10.
Who's your favorite?
Raphael. No question.
Of course.
Well, I played through the... arcade mode last night with our buddy from the Discord group, Kevin. And like Raphael is just a great combination of just outputting damage and speed. And I don't really care that he doesn't have range, because a lot of times in beat-em-up games, you're just getting it right into everyone's face anyway. So your range isn't making a huge difference. And his special, like his mobile, whereas, you know, a character like Donatello or Michelangelo, they're kind of stuck in place. So that's kind of a cool advantage too. But there are some achievements in the story mode that I have not gotten, like the no damage ones. I don't know if I'll ever go back and actually do those. That's
a tough one.
Yeah.
But it's also a perfect one to grind up those levels on. Yeah, because I've got three that are level 10, and I'm, again, like, I haven't really played it much since getting Neon White. But yeah, like, if you're going to do it, that's a good stage, because you've got, it's a really easy playthrough. It'll take you about 4 minutes to 4.5 minutes to beat the stage. And I've done it a few times where I've come within a couple of hits of, like, doing the stage perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it really, I think a lot of it just depends on making sure that you've stored up your supercharge attacks and use them properly when you get to that end fight with him.
Then I filled out the achievement list, like not the story mode one, but just the general one, like in the root menu. The last one I have to get is finishing arcade mode on hard difficulty.
Okay. And then is one thing that I thought made the game a little easy, too easy, was the fact that you can kind of like charge up your power bar by just taunting.
Yeah.
You know? So it's sort of like you could just go in, if you've got three full bars, just when the fight's over, just taunt before you go on to the next area.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch. That's true. That seems like kind of a cheesy way to play the game. I feel like maybe you should be able to do that like a couple of times a level.
Yeah.
If you wanted, but not like...
Yeah, I try not to abuse that that special. I try not to use it too much during the actual levels. And I typically use it more defensively. But...
Yeah, same.
Because you can't like take damage when you're doing that. But the... The arcade mode doesn't allow you to charge it more than once, which I think is a good way of balancing things.
Good. Yeah, like when you're in a confined area and you have someone like, I think it's like Leo and like Casey Jones have that, where it's like guys jump in at the sides and it's just like, you know when you watch a pro bowler and the ball hits the pins and they just go into like this spin cycle? It feels like that, but with like bodies. It's just like you're just spinning everywhere because they keep bouncing off the sides of the stage.
Because they won't like despawn until they've actually hit the ground. So as long as you like, keep things in the air.
You just got all of these corpses just flying around. It's kind of hilarious.
Yep. So yeah, that's Turtles. I don't really have anything else to say about it. I also...
Great game.
Yeah. Yeah, also a really, really good one.
I feel like... Well, one, I heard it sold 1 million copies in its first week.
It did.
Good for them. Like, that's deserved.
Yeah, and right now it's digital only. It is across, like, every platform, so it's got a lot of outlets to sell those copies. But yeah, 1 million copies, especially for, like, a smaller, like, a beat-em-up game. It's not really a mainstream genre anymore. Really, really
Everybody
good.
Knows Turtles in Time, though, so I mean, sure, just like, that alone would carry it.
And Ninja Turtles is a well-known property, but I'd be surprised to, like, see if, like, what other beat-em-up games hit that 1 million mark.
Well, no property. I don't know if I mentioned it on air, but I had a guy before the game came out. He came in and said, "Hey, you guys gonna get physical copies for the Turtles game?" I'm like, "No, we're not. I don't know if it has it." He's wearing a Ninja Turtles t-shirt, wearing a Ninja Turtles hat. He's got a Ninja Turtles tattoo down his arm. I'm like, "No, I don't know.
You would think if he committed that much of himself to the Ninja Turtles thing, he would look up.
Yeah, no, right?
Is there a physical copy?
I think there is a physical copy coming at some point. It, of course, not out right now. But it might be one of like those limited press that companies like Limited Run or Strictly Limited Games do. I don't know if it's like getting like a mainstream publisher putting it out and going to do reprints and stuff. It might be a one-run-only print.
Well, I know the devs said... they said two things. They said that they had not intentionally planned to have any more DLCs or any unlockable outfits or anything. But they would gauge it based on reaction. So if there was a big reaction to this, then they would consider it if it was worth the time to do it. And I would think selling 1 million copies in a week is probably well beyond their expectation.
Right.
And I'm going to pick it up eventually. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to eventually.
So I think pre-orders and whatever goes on, if they do make a physical copy of this, like how well that sells is probably going to determine as to whether or not we get DLCs where they're bringing in other characters. Like, you know, I would be fucking ripped if they got like Usagi Mojimbo in there or some other... really, or like Metalhead, like getting to play as Metalhead,
or Slash.
Yeah.
Like, ah, that'd be fun.
Oh, the other point I had was just that, like, I really there's a lot of hyperbolic talk about the game. Like, there are a lot of people who are basically being like, you know, how dead is this genre that this is the best beat-em-up game in 20 years? And it's like, you're really writing this? This is your article?
Have you not been paying attention?
Yeah, there. I mean, it's not like, you know, we get beat-em-ups constantly coming out. But there have been a bunch of good ones lately. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like we've talked about
Streets of Rage 4.
Streets of Rage 4.
River City Girls.
End of list.
Well, what was that other one?
The one they made before this, Scott Pilgrim,
yeah.
Is pretty good.
Well, too. What was that other one where it's like, you had the girl and the robot, and then you had the various. I'm bad at this.
Contra?
I'm just like, there was a beat 'em up. We played it. I even picked it up for my Switch.
There's a girl in a robot suit?
Yeah, and there was also...
I got one called...
You had your sword and shield guy that you liked. And there was...
Streets of Red.
Streets of Red.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I like Streets of Red.
Yeah. I got one called Adventures in Beatdown City, which was bad.
I remember you mentioning that one, because it like turned into like more of an RPG.
Yeah, it was not really a fighting game.
Hmm. But yeah, I don't know. Like I've seen similar sort of sentiments, or heard similar sentiments on a couple of different podcasts I listen to about like... the beat-em-up genre was dead, and now Turtles has kind of brought it back. Like, you really haven't been... You haven't had your finger on the pulse then, because...
There have been some good games that have come out lately. It's the only point. And, like, honestly, like, Streets of Rage 4 is probably better. There's so much more content to that game than there is to the Turtles game.
And it's a different style. Like, the players... The playable characters play a lot differently.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, the differentiation between, like, the different Turtles. Your inputs are working a little bit differently in terms of like you like forward punch and things like that. You have a bit more complexity to your controls. Your defensive maneuvers have a different economy to them as opposed to just unleashing your special. So yeah, it's a game that has a more complexity to the gameplay. But you know, Turtles is just such an easy game to hand a controller to an 8-year-old.
Yeah. It is. And, yeah, they definitely. Got it pitch perfect.
Mm-hmm. There's another game that I played through. It was a little RPG called Omori. It was a game that got talked briefly about in a Nintendo Indie Direct.
It looked interesting, but I forget what it was. But something about it, I was like, nah, I'm going to skip it.
Like, it's got an interesting sort of like a pencil drawing, like a colored pencil drawing art style to it, and at least like when they're doing things like cutscenes or character portraits. The style in like the world you're traversing is a lot like an Earthbound, and it works a lot like Earthbound stylistically in that there's not a really whole lot of things you can equip. You don't really find a whole lot of new gear. You have like a defensive item and a weapon. And like by doing some side quests, I unlocked like some end game defensive stuff pretty early on. So I wasn't re-equipping a whole lot of that throughout the game. But the battle systems, it's a turn-taking battle system. It's a four-party.
But it works like Earthbound, where you get your character portraits of the bomb, and it's just like a picture of the thing, right?
Right. So you don't actually see your characters in a fight. It's more just, it's first person, and you're looking at the enemy.
I don't know. Something about that always just felt... I don't know. I just don't really like that kind of style. You do, because you pretty much just want graphs and maps.
Right. If this was just like numbers, it would have been totally fine. There's this weird...
I need an isometric view of this.
I'm going to get to this in a minute.
2D is too far. Like I need,
that's one too many Ds.
I need less dimensions here.
there's this... I'll touch more on this in a little bit, but there's this thing, like status afflictions, called emotions. Emotions? I'm unfamiliar.
Like a sadness,
right? Angry.
Yeah.
Mad.
Well done.
Gassy.
Where was I? So the equipment works a lot like Earthbound. Inventory management works similar to Earthbound, where you in like stylistically, where you have like things like soda is going to replenish your mana, or smoothies that will replenish your mana, things like nachos or s'mores that will replenish your HP. So this is like, you know, quirky for the sake of being quirky, which is fine, but it kind of there's no reason that it's like nachos as opposed to like a chicken you find lying on the ground. But nachos is silly.
Maybe you take this further. Like, yeah, there's sodas for like a mana regen, but if you take too much, then you get really hyper, then crash, or you get a headache.
That's interesting.
I think that'd be a really cool.
That'd be a much more complex approach.
Ooh. Maybe it's like it lasts for a timer, then starts after you consume it, and then once it's consumed down, it takes away half your health.
Unless you consume another one and keep that caffeine high going, but then it's going to replenish even more of your HP.
Video games are so easy to make. Why aren't we making a game?
Right.
See, I've been drinking nothing but soda all day, and I got a headache. So I mean.
So the battles themselves are
die. That's why you're crashing. That's why it's so important that you get your other half of your Hershey bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Sherlock.
The battle themselves are turn taking. Four party members. You only ever have like the four members in your party. There's not like characters you switch out and stuff. The characters will level up. Their stats will grow. They'll learn new skills, and they're not like locked into classes like you would think of. Like here's your DPS. Here's your healer. Most characters, there is a character who's generally doing more damage than everyone. There's a speedier character. There's a character who's got like your healing skills. But generally speaking, all the characters are outputting relatively the same amount of damage. They learn new techniques that will, you know, do different sorts of attack, output different sorts of damage, or heal. As you level up, you are only able to have four techniques equipped. But you can swap them out between battles however you so please. The reason you would swap these out is because a lot of the battles revolve around afflicting status conditions to either yourself or to the opponent, and they are emotions. There are generally three emotions in the game. There's sad, angry, and happy. And the having these emotions status equipped to either you or the opponent are going to affect your different stats, your attack, your defense, your speed, and your accuracy. Emotions will affect positively and negatively these different stats. There's no one emotion that's going to be better than the rest of them. And then you can also just be neutral.
Okay, so that's interesting. So there are situations where you want to be sad.
Mm-hmm, right. And to go along with that, there are certain techniques that you will be more effective if you have a certain emotion afflicted onto yourself.
Okay, so you want the one character in your team to be sad all the time. The rest of them just constantly berate them, just insult them and
throw things. There are techniques that other party members can have that will afflict status emotion onto each other.
God, that's fucked up.
Or to the enemy.
Like, now, listen, we need to kill this guy. You need to be sad. Right. So, you worthless piece of shit. I need you to get in there and pull your weight for once.
Now, the inverse of this is afflicting status ailments onto the enemy is also a tactic. Because there are... For a little while in the game, we'll start here. I was running with some skills that were going to do better damage to an enemy when they are angry. And when an enemy is angry, they have higher attack output, but their accuracy is lower. And I would have skills equipped deliberately built to lower their attack. So like, hey, you're angry, you're less accurate, but then also this attack that I have does more damage to you when you're angry and also lowers your attack even more. So building out your party based on what sort of emotions you want to afflict, you know, you could probably go with like a balanced one, but if you're specializing in one, you're going to be churning through battles a lot more efficiently.
This is sounding really interesting.
And it's they do a really good job of building up to this sort of thing. It doesn't hit you with them all at once. The game isn't super long. It moves at a really good clip. But it's not as complicated as it could be at the beginning as it is to the end. So I think there's a very good curve to how often they're introducing things. Something that you do also have from the beginning is there's a meter at the bottom of the enemy screen. And that will build up the more damage you take. When it builds up all the way, you can unleash a super attack. Alternatively, what you can do You don't have to wait for it to fill up all the way. You can use that as like a secondary mana bar to do like these tag team attacks. So, you know, one character attacks and you can tag over to another character and they'll do a little follow-up attack. And then, of course, when it's their turn, they'll do their own attack as well. This sort of thing, like, at the beginning of the game isn't all that useful. It's just, like, extra chip damage that doesn't make that much difference. But by the time you're getting toward the end of the game, the further you get, the more powered up it gets and the more additional effects it could have. So I could do an attack with one character and then follow up with another character, and that will, like, inflict a happy status ailment onto your character and then also lower the enemy's attack. Or it could tag to a different character and it will, like, attack all enemies on the screen and lower all of their attack. So that's something that gets a lot more useful as you play through the game. It's an interesting system, and the game does a good job of introducing things at a good rate to keep it from being too complex too quickly. So there is this narrative going on in this game.
Oh no.
And, you know, for the most part, like, in the game, you know, you have, like, your three buddies that you're going around, and, like, you're playing through, there's, like, a time skip. You're playing, like, through the dream world, and that's where you're engaging with almost all of your combat, somewhere, like, psychedelic, whimsical area of the game. And then you're playing through, like, a three-day cycle in the real world. And basically the setup is, like, your main character is moving away in 3 days, and you are spending time with these group of friends who've become estranged from each other. And as you play through the game, you start to figure out why. And when you are in the dream world, you're younger versions of yourselves, you're all together, and you kind of get introductions to other characters that you meet or meet up again with in the real world, and it gives some extra context for who they are and why they're acting the way they are. And you kind of see, like, how different people have become. There's also a time skip. So in the real world versus the dream world, the real world, there's like 3 years ahead. So something happened 3 years ago that changed the dynamic of these relationships. You get the view of what it was before in the dream world, and you're kind of piecing together what happened in the real world. And, like, there are some really fun moments between all these characters as they reconnect and are sort of reconciling their differences and all becoming friends again. And I think it is really successful at making you care about these characters being friends. And I am going to get into spoilers here for a second, because I think they do this game a huge disservice by undercutting everything they're building towards when you get to the end. So if you don't want to know, skip ahead.
Is this going to ruin the game for me?
Maybe.
I'm thinking about this game, because this sounds really interesting.
It is really interesting, and I think, like, it's not a huge time investment either. So I think this is a game, like, worth, like, sticking on a wish list and waiting for a sale.
Let me step out of the room. Ugh.
So here's the thing.
You're going to have to, like...
Oh, he's actually leaving. Okay.
I don't want this ruined. I may actually play this.
Okay.
Does it have anything to do with these two alligators in the leisure suits?
No, but they're delightful. Okay. That was a particular, like, the game isn't particularly challenging too many times, but that fight in, like, was there's a boss fight with two of those alligators in leisure suits and, like, a mob boss alligator, or sorry, shark behind them, and, like, that was a battle where you had to, like, kill off the two alligator in leisure suit henchmen and then try to do chip damage to the shark boss, but then you'd always call in more, so there was, like, some
you gotta
extra management,
like, I see.
You know, figure out.
By the way, like, just if Wes asks, just tell him we're still spoiling.
Okay, yeah. So you find out as the game goes on that the reason the characters drift apart is there is a character, the older sister of your main character, whose name is Sunny. Mm-hmm. His older sister Mari passed away, and that's when the characters started to drift apart. And then as you go further on, you find out that she had committed suicide. And, like, the character, like, the oldest character in the group, Hiro, they were dating, they had a relationship, and it really messed him up. And it affected the characters all in different ways. And, like, my favorite character in the game is, like, this kid, Kel. He's kind of the same age as Sunny, but he's, like, no matter what, always got, like, this positivity And like he's the one guy like trying to get the group all back together. So by the end, I'm like, hey, you know, you're trying here. You're a good dude.
Yeah.
As you get you get these revelations, and the characters are also like sort of dealing with their baggage and their emotions and their trauma, and they're dealing with it together. Like, as long as we're there for each other, power of friendship and all that. And I think they handle it all really well. When you get to like the last couple hours of the game, you find out through a series of still images that the main character, Sunny, who's, I think, mostly a silent protagonist throughout the entire game, he murdered his sister and staged her death as a suicide.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And, like, it happens, like, in this nightmare sequence. And I was like, this can't be, the actual way the narrative played out, right? And by the time you get to, like, oh, yeah. This is for real. And like, there's this other character, Basil, who has a part to play within the narrative, but he's never like part of the party. He knew about it, but never told anybody. So Sunny has become like this reclusive character, probably out of guilt. It seems like the death was accidental, possibly, but he then staged it as a suicide, which kind of makes it seem like there's more sinister intent to what had happened. Because if it was an accident, why would you like, oh shit, I really fucked up, call the police? Like, anyway, but then to go through the entire process of like staging a suicide as if she had hung herself takes a whole lot of effort. But for some reason, this Basil character had never come forward and told the truth. So there's this tension that you don't quite understand until you get to the end between those two characters. If you go for the best ending, which would be the ending where neither Sunny nor Basil end up killing themselves, you end up in... you go through the final boss fight and you wake up in a hospital, and through the events of the final boss fight, the main character, Sunny, is like coming to this realization that he's got to tell the truth and that his friends will always be there for him, no matter what had happened. And it is just beyond unbelievable that at the end, when he goes to like the final title card of the game is him going to his friends in the hospital and saying like, hey, I have to tell you the truth about what happened. And presumably he does. But like, to then assume that everyone's going to be like, we're okay with this, is just like beyond an outrageous presumption. Like, you killed your sister, ruined everybody's lives, and covered it up for 3 years.
Yeah.
And like, because you discovered the power of friendship, it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
No, nothing about that is okay. So I don't know like what it was reaching for when it decided like, hey, this is the direction the narrative is going to go.
Yeah.
But no. Yeah, it's okay. Well, I soon come
are
back
then. Are safe now?
Yeah. So,
I'm going to be massively disappointed by this ending now? Cause
I mean, maybe.
All right. Yeah, but it turns out Titus was a ghost the whole time.
Did you ever play that game?
What? Final Fantasy X?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
We've talked about Final Fantasy X.
I know
many
we
times.
Did, but I didn't know he played it.
Oh, yeah. You even went through like the whole process of dodging the lightning 200 times, didn't you?
Yeah, I got every character was ultimate weapon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All
right. That one really wasn't so bad.
The lightning?
Yeah.
There's like a trick to it. There's like a place
where you can go and just live in this one little corner and you're fine. But.
Yeah, because you always jump back, but if you put yourself in the right spot, if you're kind of stuck in this divot, so you'll just kind of just be sitting there dodging strikes.
Mm.
You know?
It just takes a while.
Yeah, that is a very big moment that I don't know if you could play something like that off for... we learned something today.
Like, as a hopeful moment, we've now uncovered this truth. Now we're all going to be able to move forward. Like, no, I think that's just going to reintroduce more trauma.
Yeah.
But, anyway.
Anywho.
Who doesn't like a little trauma, though?
Yeah.
Guys, got any other games that we need to discuss?
I played a bit more of the Three Hopes demo.
Okay.
I'm going to get it. Not for a while.
Someday.
Because we got Xenoblade coming out at the end of the month.
Sure do.
And your brother's visiting, so, I mean, I'm not going to be around playing games like those kind of games anyways. But I played a bit more of the demo, and I'm more positive about it. There's a lot more strategy in it than like your typical Dynasty Warrior kind of games like that. The characters do feel pretty much the same, because you're pretty much doing the same thing. You're doing the same kind of combos and stuff. But they're diverse enough that there's certain... You want to do the weapon triangle lineups and stuff like that, and the magic users are different. You got your different weapons that you're equipping, like they did with the Hyrule Warrior ones. You got your little hub thing like you do in Three Houses, where you go
got your base.
Got your little base, and your characters have different classes and things like that. It's a watered-down...
And you do your training.
You got your training. It's a watered-down Three Houses. But there's a little bit... I think there's enough depth to it now that I would be okay playing a Dynasty Warrior game, because that was the issue with them in the past. Like, the Hyrule Warriors... Age of Calamity was fun, and the one before it was fun enough, the regular Hyrule Warriors, because there was a little bit, the characters played differently, they had the different weapons, which would change their attack specs and things
like
that.
You could play as the boat.
Yeah. Could you? I don't remember that.
Yeah, the King of Red Lions. Yeah, I think it was a DLC character.
Oh my god. That's hilarious. So I think there's enough depth in this that I will enjoy this, so I'm willing to pull the trigger on it, just not right now.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get your thoughts at another time then.
Yeah.
I do have one last game. I have the Klonoa collection downloaded. I played through the first game. It's not very long. For anyone unfamiliar, Klonoa is a PS1 platform, and there's a sequel on PS2. There are also a couple of GBA games that we'll get to at some point. Side topic. You guys, we advocate piracy. Like, we're pro piracy on this podcast.
Yeah,
you right?
are. Let's go.
They're more like guidelines.
God, I hate you so much. That was really good, though.
I've been practicing.
In front of the mirror for this podcast. Guidelines.
Not in front of the mirror. I hate my own reflection. I found this, the hardware license on the GBA has expired, so I found like this little third-party GBA machine that will take like SD cards. So for like $40, I got the little piece of hardware and an SD card. I'm just going to rip a bunch of GBA ROMs and dump it on there. So when it comes in, I'll show you guys, so to see if you're interested, rather than spending $30 or $40 a pop on GBA cartridges.
Oh, I've already abandoned the hardware. I'm not messing around with that thing.
I think you mentioned this before.
I'm already over it. It took 5 minutes of playing with this thing to be like, I can't believe I'm doing this, and then another 5 to be like, I think I'm not doing this. Yeah, no.
So which one? The targeted by the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
So which one are you talking about? The regular one or the SP? The one that
does have the closable clamshell, or is it just the...
I just have, whatever version I have.
It's a tough one to use.
Yeah.
Even the clamshell is not that better, because it's smaller, technically. It's not
the,
as wide.
The physical body of it is small. Yeah, the screen is the same size. But this I don't know if... I don't think the little hardware unit that I bought is bigger, but it is a backlit screen. So
I just feel so weird plugging in my, like, $150... Grotto headphones into what is essentially a pocket calculator.
That's not too far off.
To listen to shit tune music.
Hilarious. That is amazing. I would love to do that, actually. That's just for the absurdity alone.
But what if I told you, into the charging port, you get a little worm light?
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, it's there's clearly good games that are better played on emulators. Mm. I mean, there's good games for this console that maybe back in the day, when you didn't have any alternative or know any better, that this seemed like it was okay.
Keep going with Fire Emblem. They got Sacred Stones in this system.
It's true.
Oh, that was such a good one.
Yeah. Sacred Stones was real good.
I'm interested to see this thing that you got, this knockoff that you're getting all the way from Malaysia or something. Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be in a different language.
It's
let's hope.
This is going to be your Spanish run of blue again.
Well, my buddy Chris at work introduced me to this thing, and he's got one. He's using it. He gets like all into like programming stuff and download a whole different operating system on it and such. So when it comes in, I'll probably get him to help me set it up. Like, he's my dad. But... I think we all agree.
You have to call him Daddy while he's doing this. Hey, thanks for the help, Daddy.
I'll just
Papa.
I'll just slip it in somewhere. But I think we can all agree that the ideal way to play GBA games is with the GBA player attached to the bottom of the GameCube on the TV.
I would imagine.
Yes?
That's probably the preferred way.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you just... I don't need misshapen claws after an hour of playing a game.
Yes, like you do.
Yeah.
I always felt weird because when you played the SP, the clamshell, because it's so small, I always interlocked my fingers on the back of it.
Yeah, I can understand that. It is a very small piece of hardware. This knockoff thing that I got can handle more than GBA games. You can emulate or put the ROMs of a lot of other things onto it, and therefore it has 4 face buttons, as it should have from the beginning. But
yeah, that's what's wrong with it.
Yeah, more it needs more stuff on its tiny little body.
Yeah.
So, Klonoa had a couple of GBA games. This collection...
It's for the listener and for me, how do you spell Klonoa?
K-L-O-N-O-A. And... they're
sounds like kind of like disease. Like, some kind of sexual disease. I got Klonoa.
Gross. Started out on the PS1. This collection of 2 games is the PS1 and the PS2 sequel. The PS1 game actually got a remake on Wii. This is another remake of that. It's not a particularly long game, but for anyone unaware, Klonoa is a 2D platforming series, like kind of 2.5D, because you are like working in levels that kind of like wrap around, and it's using polygons on what's presented as a 2D plane. When you're like Klonoa does as platformers do, you run and jump. You have a double jump, but it's not like inherent to your character. In order to do your double jump, as you will need to do in order to do some of the platforming in this game, you need to pick up an enemy, as you would in say like Mario Brothers 2, except instead of like jumping on their heads and picking them up, you have like a little chain. Or you just like fling it out in front of you and it ends up picking up an enemy. You carry it with your ears. You're a rabbit. It's what rabbits do. And the
it's like a skinny Nopon.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. The first game I played through, it's not very long. It's only 13 levels. You can get through it pretty quickly. The thing about this Klonoa series is that it's weirdly like clumsy, but you have to be precise at the same time. Like, it does not give you a very wide window when you're doing like your grapple onto enemies, and there are some times when you are mid-air, you have to grapple an enemy in air and then jump off of them immediately. But it's unforgiving with when you're able to grapple, and sometimes the enemies are moving around, so sometimes you'll just fall into a bottomless pit because you think you have the timing correct, but you just barely miss the enemy, and then you end up having to restart. And it is based on lives. When you run out of lives, you have to start the level all over again. The levels can be lengthy. It seemed like instead of like having a large quantity of levels, they were going for levels that will take you like 10 or 12 minutes in order to get through. It's a long time. That's longer than a Shredder's Revenge level. So the PS2 game remake is notably better in the way it controls. It doesn't feel quite as stiff as the PS1 game remake. It still has a lot of the same problems where if you're in a particularly tough platforming section, you can find yourself racking up a lot of deaths and then getting kicked out to the beginning of the level. And I don't know, they're not very long games. I'm not super positive on them. I think at this point, like, if you're interested in this game series, maybe watch a few videos first, wait for a sale. It's not like a full price retail game. It was $39, so it's a bit of a premium price for an eShop game, but it's not like the full $60.
Question: how detailed is the hat on this guy in the game?
Fairly detailed.
Did you notice the fact that it's Pac-Man?
I did. Yeah, this is a Namco game.
So that's just what's up.
Yeah, he's got a Pac-Man hat.
Ears too. Different colors? What's that? Oh, no, that's his hand. Okay.
He's more like a spider than he is. Like okay. A rabbit, you said?
I get rabbit from it, but...
No, it's a spider.
Okay.
It's like if a rabbit and a raccoon had a baby.
Yeah. By the way, you ever heard of a thing called the Wonder Swan?
Yes.
It was released on the Wonder Swan. So okay. Maybe your knockoff product thing that you're buying can
It could probably run Clono, yeah.
I've never heard of WonderSwan.
It's a handheld, apparently manufactured by Bandai in an effort to compete with the Game Boy Color.
There's two D-pads.
Came out in 1999, and it sold 3.5 million columns.
The WonderSwan. So there's a guy who worked at Nintendo since the 70s when they were making toys.
Johnny WonderSwan.
Johnny WonderSwan. or his Japanese name was Gunpei Yokoi.
Exactly.
And he was kind of like the brainchild behind the Game Boy. And a lot of other Nintendo products, but the Game Boy is what he was most famous for. A huge successful product, as we know. We still talk about it from time to time on our retro show. He was also... So the driving creative force behind the Virtual Boy, which was not a great product nor very successful. And the sort of like urban legend around it is that he was so embarrassed by the terribleness of the Virtual Boy and how terribly it was received that he resigned from Nintendo. And then he went on to design the WonderSwan.
Why does it have two D-pads?
I don't know. I never owned one. I don't give a shit about the WonderSwan.
This is so unrelated and kind of weird to describe, but I was recently watching a video about an old video game in which David Duchovny voiced the main character.
Oh, shut the
fuck
up.
And they had this wonderful promotional video of David Duchovny like trying to like, you know, sell people on the game and why he thinks the character's cool. And they show him playing the game, and it's like a PlayStation game, right? He puts the controller on his thigh and then like plays it with
like a keyboard?
Like two index, like his index and middle finger of both are like tapping buttons.
Oh, how weird.
It's like he's almost like trying to treat it like it's an arcade game. Like he's at like a stand-up arcade booth playing with a joystick and
these
things. And he's like got it on his leg. And it's just adorable. It's super adorable to watch him. A guy that probably does not play video games like fucking ever.
It's the first time he ever played one. How do I do this?
Yeah, exactly. It's one of two scenarios. Either one, he just plays them weird because that's just what's comfortable for him. People are different. Or two, no one told him how he actually worked this machine. He has no idea. It's completely alien to him.
Or some like stagehand or like production assistant.
Oh, was just fucking with him. I mean, it's hard to describe because it's sort of like there's such reverence for this guy, and for him to not completely have no idea about one of my favorite hobbies. It would be like if you saw David Ortiz and like, "What's your favorite Pokemon?" He's like, "The fuck is Pokemon?"
He's like, "I really like Agumon." Like, oh no,
I'm pumped about Nexomon. Got my pre-order. It's great.
Do you remember what game it was? If you do, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of the game?
Just type in
David Duchovny voice acting video game. Something
was
like
it?
That.
Just Google it.
It was a PS1 game.
I'll look it up real quick. Okay. Because I remember the content creator whose video I was watching did a really deep dive on it.
Because I wanna guess.
Okay.
But I want to know what platform it is first.
I'm fairly certain it is PlayStation.
PlayStation 1.
That was a Nintendo game. They handed him a PlayStation controller.
He wasn't actually playing the games. It was like one of those like E3 stage events where like they hand the people a controller, but they're not actually playing.
One of those dressed like the professor with the big.
Oh! Did you guys hear that E3 is going to be back in 2023 officially? Like a new company is going to run it.
I don't think anybody cares.
First question is, do you believe them? I don't.
I don't at all. I think E3 is dead.
We'll see.
There's going to be like four people in the crowd. One guy dresses as the squid professor again.
Why are you streaming this? Why wasn't this just a YouTube video?
Oh, I found the name of the game.
Okay.
It was a PS2.
Oh, PS2. Oh, I don't know that.
Really, 2005.
2005.
Very generic name for this game.
I've never heard of this game.
Okay. Is it a first-person shooter?
Yes.
Jeez.
I would be so shocked if John just pulls this out of his ass. Boom!
It's a first-person shooter. It's got a generic name.
Yeah.
Is it...
Something you might associate with a guy like David Duchovny.
It's very alien to me.
Wes is raising his eyebrows. No, I'm not so sure about my guess.
Do you think that was an okay hint? I think that was a pretty good hint.
Sure.
Yeah.
guest card.
I'm trying to think of like PlayStation 2 games. Good
and gun cocks. Like, what did you get?
There's no way you get this.
Okay.
There's zero way you get this.
It's a game called Area 51.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and it's not the Area
51. But it's not the arcade.
But it's not the arcade shooter.
Hmm.
That was another Area 51, and I love that game.
Oh, yeah, it's real good.
Yeah, but it's not that. No, it was another first-person shooter that was made, and it was very much like a, I don't know, like a Halo-esque kind of scenario where it's like, you're this generic good guy who's like, taking some space marines through a thing or something. I don't remember.
Right.
But it was just great watching him do the thing.
I think we're through all the video games at this point. That's Klonoa.
Yeah.
You guys got any movies that you feel like talking about? If you feel like it, we can close it out if you want.
We finished The Boys. Boys had their last episode.
That's true.
That was pretty good.
That show, like, I like it. I'm generally positive on The Boys. It must be extremely difficult to parody reality at this point, because the things that they're parodying is just reality, except it's a superhero doing it. And we're going to spoilers for this one, because Ryan hasn't watched it yet, as far as I know. Have you watched
seasons? I watched a little bit of it, but no.
But yeah, there's stuff that's like really on the nose with what they're being satirical about. But I don't know how you like take it the one step further to be like more subtle satire.
I would not use the word subtle or subtlety with The Boys.
How you mask it as satire more, as opposed to just like doing the thing that's happening in reality.
Yeah, I mean, you very much get the sense that there are some tropes and modern things that they're trying to associate with some of the characters. Like, I get that component of it.
It is in full force in season three.
I don't know. I feel like it's a... What is the show about? It's kind of... I think the thing that's the most memorable about The Boys is, like, the gore.
Mm-hmm.
The gore and the occasional TNA. That's really what the driving force is.
There's a lot of people popping.
I'm not going there for, like...
So many people popping.
You know, the biting acerbic satire.
Mm.
You know? It's kind of just, like, super violent superhero action stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's the most interesting thing about it is you're watching, you know, the violent group of vigilantes who don't have superpowers trying to take out the ones who do, and the sort of roundabout clandestine things they have to do in order to overcome people who are superpowered. And
yeah, kind of like how Batman sizes up everyone he's around, and he's like, if I had to kill this guy who's infinitely stronger than I am, or if she's got this crazy power that nobody could replicate, like, how would I take her down?
Yeah, but the longer the show goes on, the more they lean into a political satire or political parroting at this point. And
yeah,
like, I don't fault them for being very direct.
Well, I know they've got this new character Stormfront in this season.
Season two. Yeah.
Or no, it's not Stormfront, sorry. No, there's another, like, Soldier Guy. Soldier Boy.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, he's the new one in this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so bad with the names. Like, who's the main guy?
Homelander.
Fucking amazing. Like, I love how you just can't feel comfortable with him. Of all things, like, I remember I was talking about that movie Sexy Beast, where I was like, Ben Kingsley is just so fucking intense all the time. And it reminds me of Homelander. Of just like how anytime Homelander's on the screen, no one feels safe. It's just, he just makes you feel uncomfortable doing anything.
Yep.
You know? There's just like so much just bottled rage in that performance.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
it's
really
exciting.
And just like this casual sadism, like, yeah, I might just murder you.
Yeah. I mean, not that he does. Like, he really doesn't... I mean, yeah, he murders people pretty frequently. But it's not like it's every single scene he's brought in just to, you know, just to, like, you know, put someone through a deli slicer or something.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, what do you guys think of The Boys?
I mean, I enjoy it. I gotta be in the right frame of mind for it, because it is just very intense. Like, I always feel uncomfortable watching it.
You know, I started watching a superhero show.
Yeah.
And it's wild. I didn't even know this existed, but it just came up, and I was like, I need something dumb and stupid to put on, and I really got suckered into it. The live-action Tick that oh. came out in 2017.
On Amazon, yeah. the Amazon one.
It was Amazon.
It's fantastic. It's really okay. fun. It's like all of, it's like that stuff that just makes you like kind of viscerally cringe in The Boys is gone. And it's just like the humor of The Boys in the tip.
Okay.
It's really, really fun. If The Boys feels like it's kind of just too heavy and a little too gruesome, like, and The Tick can be a little violent at times.
It's rough, man. Like,
but The Tick is just so fun. It is so, so good. Very it's cool. like there's a scene where like the ninja guy just starts stabbing everybody, just starts killing all of these people, and then like at the end of it, the moth Ethan is like trying to describe what happened. And he's like, it's like he was trying to find a place but to put his knife, but couldn't figure out where. He's just like stabbing everybody.
It's perfect.
I love it. No, it's so funny. The Tick is just everyone in that show is great. I watched the first season and I'm starting the second one.
How many seasons were there?
So get this, they made a pilot and then didn't film the second episode until a year later when it finally got picked up.
Oh.
It's weird how that happened. Yeah, they basically just made this really cool pilot, but I guess they couldn't find a studio to produce the full thing. So then they got brought on, and even then it was brought on in like a temp format where they were only allowed to make 6 more episodes. And then that was successful, so they made 6 more episodes to finish the first season. And then they made a second season. So I just finished the first season. And James Earl Haley is the bad guy. Like, he's great. Love him. He played, what is it? Rorschach. The
Watchmen.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a good show. I'd actually totally recommend people watch it. It's a fun one.
Yeah. I saw a couple things. I watched The Outfit, which is one that you had seen too.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that a little while ago for my my usual Monday movie night.
I thought that was a really really interesting movie. I thought it was really good. It's sort of this this take on I don't know, kind of like a Reservoir Dogs, you know, this kind of a genre of dramatic thriller where you have the people in the room and one of them has betrayed the rest of them in some way and they're just trying to figure out who it was. And then this one, it's it all takes place, like 100% of the movie is in this guy's shop, and he's a
he's a tailor.
Yeah. He'll call himself a cutter. Yes. Because a tailor hems pants and sews buttons, whereas he like makes the entire suit. He patterns it all out and cuts it and puts it all together.
This is, so yeah, he's a cutter of suits for the mafia, essentially. Mm-hmm. This local mafia in Chicago post World War II.
So you do get the sense, the implication that he has a past. And that he relocated to Chicago to start his own business. And like, just by happenstance, his customer base becomes the mafia. And it's not something where he was trying to get involved in some sort of nefarious business. It just worked out that way. And, you know, they pay and they don't bother him, so he just kind of rolls with it.
Yep.
But the sort of narrative just kind of unfolds with... There's some sort of operative within the sphere of this group of mafia that is recording them and feeding the tapes over to the FBI. So, you know, they intercepted one of those tapes and it kind of becomes the MacGuffin of the movie where the first person who is able to listen to the tape is going to figure out who is the informant and then be able to dispose of them. And the our main character, whose name is escaping me, is basically trying to preserve himself by seeding suspicion within everybody else so that, you know, the ultimate goal is just kind of like to be left alone, but if they end up killing each other in the process, no big deal. It doesn't really parade too many characters through. You pretty much get, like 5, maybe 6 characters throughout the entire movie?
Yeah, it looks like there's 7 named characters. Mm-hmm. And a couple of, like, strong-arm thugs at the very end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I think that the movie does a good job of, like, maintaining tension while, like, continually building stakes because by, you know, through sort of circumstances and people, like, being manipulated, there are characters who befall a less than optimal fate. Let's just put it that way.
Yes. Again, it's like, I think a very good comparison to say that it's a bit like Reservoir Dogs. Except this is, feels a little, I don't know, a little more high class.
Yeah.
Like, Reservoir Dogs is very much, I mean, it's almost like a joke that they're in the black and white suits, you know?
Mm.
But yeah, in this movie, it very much does feel the, you know, the rich culture and the craftsmanship of this guy as being a cutter, you know? I just like that it's very much a one-room play. Like, I feel like this movie could translate to stage so well.
Mm.
I feel like reading the script is a fascinating story. I think that, you know, not to say that there's anything... that the performances aren't fantastic themselves, but, like, this is one of those, you know, a lot of times a movie will bludgeon you with a script. This is one that kind of sorts itself out like a little puzzle,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's really nice watching the dominoes fall in the story, kind of watching it all play out and seeing who's really doing what and why they're doing it. Really enjoyable. Really enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and Mark Rylance is the main guy. He is this kind of weathered old cutter. And you also get Johnny Flynn, not the football player Johnny Flynn, but a guy named Johnny Flynn, and Zoe Deutsch and Dylan O'Brien. So, I mean, these are not names that I recognize, really, like, aside from having seen Mark Rylance and a couple of other things. Like, I don't really... Not a lot of familiar faces. I think the guy that's in Maze Runner is one of these dudes.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
I also... saw the Minions movie.
Ooh.
Took the girls to see that.
Nice.
Did
you do the memeable stuff and, like, dress up in a nice suit?
I did not know about the Gentle Minions before I went, so no, yeah. I did not. Otherwise, I would have.
Randomly, yeah. I don't know why I watched it, because I wasn't a big fan of this movie, but on my YouTube feed, it popped up the one of the early scenes of the Mortal Engines movie.
Oh,
where
sure.
London consumes another town. But at one point there... This is related, don't worry, I didn't... But this Minions, no, let's talk about this other terrible movie.
I'm intrigued about where you're going with this.
At one point, the one character walks into, like, the Museum of London or whatever, and, like, the city is shaking because they're chasing down this other little thing. And he's like, oh, no, we need to make sure the American gods are fine. And it's two giant Minion statues.
Oh, shit. I didn't notice that.
I was like, this is just... stupid. Like, that's not even clever. Like, that's just stupid. Oh, all right, there you go.
The American gods.
So Mortal Engines makes a Minions reference. They're a Despicable Me reference.
But this, the actual Minions movie, like, the, I've enjoyed the sort of Despicable Me properties well enough. Like, the first movie, the first Minion movie I've seen a bunch of times because the girls really like that one. So we went and saw this one, and, like, even from our perspectives, like, an adult being able to enjoy a kids movie, because there are some studios who are really good at this. Like the Pixar movies are usually pretty enjoyable for a majority of audiences. These are Despicable Me movies. A lot of the stuff that DreamWorks does most of the time is enjoyable by a wide audience. That this movie is just nearly intolerable. It wasn't really focused on the Minions. This was more of like a Gru origin story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's fine. It's no big deal. But then every once in a while you get like these little side vignettes with Minions that were just kind of inconsequential. And none of the jokes were even like, oh, that's cute for kids or anything like that. It was all just... Not even like general havoc or mischief. It was just kind of like weird, outrageous stuff. I don't know. It's hard to describe why it was that the jokes didn't land. Kind of like visual puns, those sorts of things.
Have you ever seen Gremlins 2?
I have not seen Gremlins 2.
That's essentially, yeah.
What you're describing sounds like, and I like Gremlins 2 a lot. It's a fun movie, but it's sort of like they just didn't know what to do, so they were just like, every fucking kind of gremlin you can even think of, let's make it.
You ever see that Key and Peele skit about it?
I wasn't going to bring that up, but yeah, that sketch
oh,
is pretty perfect.
That is such a good skit.
Yeah. This guy's like in a writer's room with all of the guys, and he's like, I want everyone to make up a gremlin. It's going in the movie.
I mean, oh, I'm sure. Like,
I want a gremlin made of pure electricity.
I've seen that one. I've seen that skit. That was good.
You mean a gremlin with googly eyes? It's going in.
He's like, wait, you don't even want a gremlin. You want Hulk Hogan? He is in the movie. So, Gremlins 2 is pretty good, though. I guess that's what
this Minions movie, It's almost like they started with like the end. Like, what is this movie going to be about? Gru gets kidnapped and the minions got to rescue him. Like, okay, why does Gru get kidnapped? Well, he's got this magic necklace that people want to take from him. Like, why does he have the magic necklace? Well, he has the magic. He got the magic necklace because he stole it for some other villains. Like, okay, why did they have the magic necklace? Well, they got it because they needed it to take over the world, and he wanted to. Okay, why did he take it from them? Well, he wanted to join them because he wants to be a villain too. But they didn't want him because he's a kid, so he stole the necklace from them to prove himself. Like, so then they kidnap him to get it back? Well, no, they didn't kidnap him. Someone else kidnapped him, and then they're chasing after him too.
I hate everything about this.
But how did how did the kidnapper know to kidnap him? Well, the kidnapper was part of the group of villains before, but they double crossed him they double crossed him, so he's out of the group. Why did they double cross him? Well, because he's like old and they don't want him in the group anymore.
John, I will give you the money for a movie ticket to not make me sit through this anymore.
Okay, well then how do the minions factor into this? Well, the minions go to rescue him. Like, okay, so he's kidnapped by the guy who wants the necklace and being chased by a group that also wants the necklace. Who's got the necklace? A different minion. What's this minion doing? He's just going on a road trip. Where? Pfft, I don't know. Why? Pfft, I don't know. Fuck off. That's the Minion movie.
Yeah, I think that that you gotta remember, a lot of times the plot is just a way to tell a movie. You know, we can't make...
Oh, that seems... That sounded 80. Deep, but it's not.
There's only 88 minutes. There's only 88 minutes of runtime here, so it's surprising that they crammed this much bullshit.
Could have been 15.
But it's like, if they don't have things happen, you can't have a movie. So they gotta make people chase after a thing, regardless of how meaningful it is. By the way, I just saw the... I mean, I guess we'll finish this discussion. And then
just to put a point on it.
Yeah.
All that plot I just described, yeah. Amongst all that, there are all the minion vignettes. And there is a point in the movie where the three main minions, Kevin, Stewart, and Bob, are being pursued. They escape their assailants because a character voiced by Michelle Yeoh, I think is how you pronounce her last name, the main character from Everything Everywhere at Once, rescues them. And then there's a whole 6 or 7 minute sequence where she is teaching them kung fu. Why? Because they wanted to learn. And at first she was like, no. And they were like, come on. And she was like, no. And they were like, come on. And she was like, no. And they were like, come on. And she was like, fine. So then they learn kung fu. Does not factor into the movie at all. You just spent 10 to 12 minutes watching them learn kung fu.
With Jean-Claude Van Damme, Lucy Lawless, Dolph Lundgren, and Danny Trejo, you're going to tell me that was wasted time?
I'm absolutely telling you it was wasted time.
Wow.
Which, it's like, I don't mind wasting my time. My time is absolutely worthless.
I'll wait for that.
But yeah, anyway, what were you going to say? That's enough about Minions.
Oh, I saw the new Thor movie.
Oh, nice.
Oh, was it good?
Everything you just complained about, the plot not making sense, you will despise this movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Because, there is a very much an event that occurs, which not only means that we've wasted so much time throughout this movie, we've wasted time in every Avengers movie. Every Avengers movie had a device that could have solved everything the entire time. And it wouldn't have changed anything, impacted anything. Everything would have been fine. And we don't even know why this thing exists that can just do whatever it... Again, I don't want to spoil anything. They make these movies. They gotta have a thing that solves the problem.
Yeah, these Marvel movies are always filled with, like, sometimes literal magic boxes.
Yes. So prepare for a literal magic box.
Cool.
But yeah, it's whatever. Oh man, fucking Christian Bale though, he's doing it. Oh my god, he's amazing in this. He may be like my new favorite character.
Christian Bale in this?
Any of these Marvel movies? Yeah, and he's got this thing called the fucking Necro Sword.
Oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah, he's this guy Gore.
Apparently, oh, Christian Bale's a bad guy. I'm on board.
He's been around for like about 12 years in the Thor universe of the comics.
Oh.
But yeah, he just looks so fucking badass in this. It's unreal. He reminds me a little bit of Pyramid Head from the Silent Hill.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, he looks a lot like Pyramid Head. Just a total badass. Like, you know, to think that him and Ronan were like all part of this thing, like, why can't these two pal around? You know?
Or fight each other.
Oh. Yeah, like a Godzilla vs. Kong scenario.
Ooh.
Dude, I'm going to throw down. Figure out who's got the better sword.
Well, Ronan had a hammer.
Oh, that's right, he had a hammer.
Just like Thor.
No.
A little different. Longer handle.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a fun enough movie. I think
I heard the Guardians are in it for like 10 minutes, and like that's it.
Yeah.
That's probably expected.
Well, that's the thing. They're like, hey, we're going off to space to do the next movie. I'm like, this is gonna be a fun movie, the Guardians and Thor, and then they're just gone instantly.
I mean, that's
kind of their thing.
That's kind of the thing with the MCU here's this thing we're setting up and solved.
Yeah, like the resolved. Bringing in here's the Illuminati. Everybody wants this, and they're all dead.
Well, I mean, that was one of the worst parts of that movie.
I mean, the
there was a lot of worse parts in that movie.
That was fine. Leave it alone.
Wait, the Doctor Strange movie?
Yeah.
That
was great.
Not that positive on the Doctor
Strange. That was great. It was fine.
That was a movie that knows that all of these things are bullshit. At least it's self-aware.
There was so
it's not
many
trying
things
to sell
was,
you a false bill of
goods. There's so many things I thought they were going to do with this movie, and they're just like, fuck it, we're not. Here it is, and
you wanted that movie to do more? That movie was exhausting.
That did the thing where the Spider-Mans pointed at each other, though.
I wanted to do the thing where it impacts the actual overall MCU, but bring in the X-Men and bring in the Fantastic Four. We could or not.
We need to let a movie just be a movie. We cannot have every movie be part of this some sort of long form narrative.
They teased
one movie can just be one movie.
I'm
and
all
leave
upset.
It at that.
They teased me. I got my hopes up.
Yeah, it is exhausting trying to be a fan of the MCU. Like, how much content you have to consume just to sort of be aware of the narratives that are going. How many, like, garbage TV shows they spin off and movies that don't mean shit.
I'm becoming on your side of this with MCU viewing. I'm getting less and less MCU enthused.
Past 5 years, I think you pretty much just watched the Hawkeye TV series.
Yep, that was good.
You check out Doctor Strange, and you maybe watch
Eternals.
Just the Christian Bale scenes of this new Thor movie.
Eternals,
yeah, sure.
No.
But just the post-credit scenes where they introduce characters that are never going to be in the
I watched the first episode of that Ms. Marvel show. Can't think of anything I care less about.
Yeah.
I got to tell that one episode. I'm like, I don't even want to finish the series. I don't give a shit.
I heard about the ending. I have feelings about it. We're not going to get into it, though.
That's
enough. I think we're done here. I did watch the Bob's Burgers movie. It's available on HBO Max. It's not good.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Yeah, it's disappointing. There are a couple of good moments in it, but overall, it's weirdly like a by-the-numbers murder mystery. Like, why was this even like a premise for a Bob's Burgers movie? It's very strange. It feels like a weird, cheap cash-in for a show that I don't know like how much of a mainstream hit it actually is. Anyway, neither here nor there. Next up is the retro show. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, well.
We got cats and dogs.
A lot of things going down.
We got a fuck ton of movie, including cats and dogs.
The second best-selling PlayStation 2 game came out.
Mm-hmm. There will be a number of GBA games to work through.
Lots of GBA content.
We're going to keep on working through the GBA launch lineup, as well as a couple other games that came out in the month of July. And I think we're done with the N64. There might have been a Game Boy Classic game that came out. I'm going to have to do some fact-checking real quick. Because we do still have one or two GBA
That's
color
insane.
Games to work through. Oh, yeah.
That's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Here's this new handheld system. Let's still make stuff for the old one. It doesn't.
It's something that happened once upon a time. Like, there were, you know, until about 96, there were still Super Nintendo games. 97, there were still Super Nintendo games coming out every once in a while, and the N64 was already out.
Oh.
There were NES games coming out until, I think the last NES games were 98, 99. Like, Famicom disk systems in Japan. So those are, they're a little bit more disposable. But that's not the point. The point is the show is over. The end.
So long.
See ya.